Well, I hope you've all had a great day so far. So I'm Ben Hawkridge from the Knowledge Media Institute at York University, and it's been great to be invited here to come and talk about something I haven't actually given a presentation about, so I hope it's not too long or too short, but we'll see. A couple of people have already earlier mentioned about tracking, so I'm not a web analytics person. I'm not someone who comes from that side of things. I'm actually a software developer. So this is more my perspective, and I'm going to start with, well, what is tracking? We had some suggestions about tracking earlier, and really you could argue it's about trying to find out what people do on the internet. In other words, for your OER, it might be, well, you know, where are people coming from? How are they discovering this material? We've just had a presentation about discoverability. How do I know that people are coming from Flickr to look at my content? How do I know that? How do you do that? How does Google Analytics know? Peter alluded to a little bit about how that happens. But tracking is really about discovering that sort of information, and arguably can go right down to an individual. So for those of you who use Facebook, Facebook probably knows more about you than Google does. So even if you think you're putting stuff in anonymously, chances are, if you use Amazon or something like that, which knows something about you, and there's some banner link on there, well, that banner link is probably also on Facebook, and they probably know something about it. They share that data, and they actually probably do know who you are on Facebook as a result. So tracking can also be sort of the nasty side of the web, but it's also quite important for our purposes. I'm actually going to take a bit of a step back really from the specifics of tracking and really talk about the wider picture of web analytics. And I'm actually going to do a bit of a 101 here in getting a little bit detailed on the techie side, because I think it's important to have some insight into what information is available, and also there's some limitations with that data. So traditionally, web analytics started with log file analysis. So you have a web server. Every time someone makes a request, it logs some information about that request. And that's how, probably for the first maybe 5 years that the World Wide Web as a term was, once it was coined, that's how people analyze stuff. But they also found that there were problems with that, so they also invented another technique called page tagging, which is what Google Analytics uses and is what Peter referred to earlier. There is also separately, which I'm not really going to talk about at all today, what you can do within your own content management system, which is to actually track hits within that. So if someone clicks on something in your content management system, it probably has a module in it that allows you to track within context of that content management system. But I'm not really going to talk about that at all today. So here's where we get a bit techie. Here is a single line. Unfortunately, it's gone to several lines, as you can see, of a log entry from an Apache log web server. We've got a whole bunch of data in here. What does it actually break down into? So I've just separated it out more or less onto individual lines. And the first thing we've got is an IP address, and I'm assuming most people know what an IP address is. Effectively, it's the physical address of one of these, or a computer, or whatever. That's what that is. Come back to that in a moment. Date timestamp, obviously we know when something happens. We've actually got the resource that's been requested, and this is how it's been requested. There are various different ways of requesting resources. We have a response code which indicates whether it's successful or not. So you may know about 404s. Those are failed response codes. 200 means it's successful. We have the data size. We have the referrer. This is a really useful piece of information because it tells you the web link for which this particular resource has been requested from, if it's different from your own server. So if someone had requested this cover art image from a link on Flickr for some reason, we get a referrer in here which would tell you that's where it came from. And so some of the information mentioned earlier where someone was able to discover that there was a lot of traffic coming from a certain site, or that a lot of their metadata had been called in, was because they were able to analyse this referrer information and determine where that was coming from. I'm going to come back to that a bit later. And then lastly, we have the user agent. In this case, this rather long piece of string here basically tells us this is a Google Chrome browser running on a Windows machine. So you can tell something about what people are actually doing. So there's quite a lot of information in this. Now, your IP address, coming back to that briefly, is a unique identifier of a device. Sadly, it's not quite as simple as that. But essentially, if we just keep it simple for the moment, is it basically you can say that's a unique person or unique device. So we can approximate it to a unique person. So we'll come back to that because that's a bit some limitations there. But the rest of this information we can basically analyze in various ways. We could, for instance, say, well, we only want to have things that are actually successful hits. We're not interested in all the error messages. We're not interested in the partial hits. We're not interested in the redirect type hits. And so immediately, you take your log file, you analyze that, throw out all the stuff you don't want. You might say, well, hang on a second, a web page is actually made up of, I don't know, say 50 elements on it. We've got lots of pictures here. We've got some CSS files. We don't want all that. We want to know only when someone goes to that particular page. So we can basically say, well, we're going to just throw away all those bits. And you can filter it all out. Eventually, you can make some sort of analysis. So, as I said, limitations. Sorry, there is some limitations there with log files. Browser and web caching. So in the early days, I expect most of you probably used a modem at some point in the early days of the internet. People introduced things called web caching. So your browser caches files on your end. So let's say I've now gone to the front of OpenSpires, gone down into OpenSpires to maybe lecture on philosophy. I then hit the back button. Oh, my browser's cached all those images. It's cached even the page. It doesn't actually hit your server, technically. It might just hit it a little bit. And so we don't actually see the fact that the person's gone back. So if you're trying to understand the behavior of how someone is going through your site, which you can do by looking at log files, you'll actually miss the fact that they went backwards. So a bit of a problem, this web caching. Now, that's just the browser web caching. It just so happens that the internet, in order to speed things up, if you're using a mobile phone or something like that, well, your mobile network is caching the pages you're watching so that someone else in this room who goes to the same pages happens to come out of the cache and doesn't hit the server at all. So suddenly log files don't look too good. We also have web proxies. So there's a good chance your institution uses a web proxy. This is in some ways acts as a function of a caching, but it's actually usually used as a security protection. And web proxies and NATs both often run off a single IP. That means the entire university of maybe 10,000 people actually have one IP. So all of a sudden that one IP which you thought was lots of devices is now 10,000 people maybe, or maybe not. You don't know. Dynamically assigned IP addresses. If you're using a modem, you probably get a different IP address every single time you dial up on the modem. Obviously, these days you don't do that so much, but the point is you often get different IP addresses, so you can't actually be sure whether one IP address is used uniquely by one person. And, of course, I happen to have three different devices here, all used by one person, all with different IP addresses, and I've used this computer, so that's a fourth one. So, again, very difficult to decide with an IP address how many people are using it. So, not long after people start analysing log files, they realise that there's a lot of limitations, and they introduce the concept of page tagging. One of the key reasons they developed it initially, actually, was to allow third parties to offer web analytics services. Often third parties can't really ask you for your log files. There's all sorts of reasons why they might not be able to do it. But really, it was initially developed so they could actually offer a service to you, just as Google Analytics. You put a little bit of JavaScript in all your web pages. All of a sudden, you're actually able to get a web analytics service by a third party. So developed partially because of the limitation of log files, but also for third parties. And more importantly, able to track it across multiple domains. If you've only got your own log files, to analyze, and in a big institution, you might only have it for your specific service. You may not have access to the main website. So how do you analyze those together? How do you allow people to go across domains? And of course, for your marketing and you're doing banner ads, etc., you want to be able to track people across multiple domains, because you want to know that the person that's going to buy the power drill is also the person that's interested in Volkswagen cars. And that's when you send them advertising, you would send them an advert on, I don't know, something related to those two things. Probably not to Barbie dolls anyway. So enables targeted advertising. So really the key underlying models of both Facebook and Google is to sell targeted advertising. AdWords is all about making sure that the words that appear on given websites are both relevant to the website but relevant to you as an individual user. So that's sort of the slightly darker side of tracking. I'm going to skip through this very quickly, but basically, you can look at the slide later because Peter mentioned it, but essentially page tagging involves typically loading a very small invisible image through JavaScript in a web page. That causes a hit on the remote server, and as a result, they're able to record that information. They typically use set the cookies at the same time. These days, they sometimes use Flash because a lot of people actually restrict the uses of their cookies. Apparently, it's estimated about 25% of internet users actually restrict the use of their cookies, which breaks a lot of the ability to track across multiple domains. So people are using Flash, so I don't know whether anyone realised that little bits of information have now been stored in your Flash local storage. And in future, HTML5 will also suffer some problems along that line. But one of the other things they can do is they can actually also store additional information beyond what we talked about earlier. So they can actually identify which version of Flash you've got, what screen size you have, maybe a bit more about the device you have. So there's various things there. Anyway, I'm going to move on from that. Oh, no, actually, there is one little point I just want to put on the bottom here. Additional benefit of page tagging is it can track events within a page. So Peter and myself both very interested in video and audiovisual material. So the idea of being able to actually record the behavior of someone interacting with a video is really something of interest. Page tagging potentially allows that. I mean, how does YouTube know what a view is? They record how many views you have. Well, my understanding is I think that someone has to have watched 60% of the video or something like that. Well, how do they know someone watched 60% of the video? Through event tracking like this. So that's one advantage of page tagging. So just a quick summary there. Tracking across multiple domains provides access to information that's not available in the log files. And perhaps more importantly for most uses of tracking is that it gets around the limitations of IP addresses. Whenever I'm quoting iTunes U stats, which is one of the things I do a lot of, one of the restrictions I have there is all I know is an IP address. People want to know how many visitors there are. I say, well, it's X number of visitors, but these are actually unique IPs, and there's a lot of caveats with that. So, there we go. Right. So, why would you even be interested in tracking in the first place? Well, this is a word that I've only discovered in the last couple of years, or a phrase rather, key performance indicators. But essentially, they're measures that are often asked these days with respect to websites, but maybe in respect to other things, which, as I've said here, typically define the metrics of success or failure. So one of the successes of your OER is how many people have actually visited the site. But another criteria might be, well, how many of our students have visited the site? Or it might be, how many people from America or China have visited our site? That requires both web analytics and potentially tracking. And as I've just mentioned, as a sort of bit of a really a big question mark here is, in defining these particular things, can you actually report them? Are you actually technically capable of actually answering the questions posed? So another example I've got here, going back to the alumni, is, you know, how do you know alumni are visiting your site? You know, you send an email out to someone. So I've got an example here. Send an email out to someone, and in that you've got a link. It's a link to your OER. They click on the link. How do you know that that is someone from your alumni? Anyone got any answers for that?
Well, it depends how you send the alumni the link. I would suggest that how many are there you going to go? Sorry, everyone.
Well, I'm probably going to answer your question anyway, so, but go on, ask your answer. Go on.
I'd either generate a unique URL for the alumni, which map that to the same place using a redirect or an access file. Or if I wanted to get really precise, I would throw out random IDs in the URL so I could track which of them might.
So I'll be reiterating what you said, but another quick way someone could do it is you go to Bitly or one of these other URL shorteners, and this is just another solution, by the way. You could just stick your URL in there. You get a unique Bitly thing out. You stick it in the email. What you'll find is Bitly, particularly if you want to pay them a little bit of money, will actually report all the stats that come back on that URL. And if that URL is only used in that email, obviously there's a risk that people might quote it elsewhere, but if it's only used in that email, then you've got fairly certain clue that basically, particularly if it comes out in the last, you know, few days after you sent the email out, that that's the number of people from the alumni who've come through. But another solution possibly here is that you might actually send, or you might allow your alumni to actually have a site which they sign up to. So it might be a site that's just for alumni, they're allowed to have an account, maybe it's an OpenID account, and in that you have some sort of tracking cookie. Okay? Essentially, by using page tagging, which allows you to track people across multiple domains, is that when they come to your actual OER, you're able to identify that same piece of information using the page tagging technology and actually identify the fact that that person is from your alumni. It does require, obviously, that they've signed up, but it's probably a little bit more accurate, or at least more certain. And this bottom one is actually more or less along the lines that's already just been mentioned. So I'm going to come back a little bit to key performance indicators, but I just want to mention about the structure of websites, because this is something that can impact considerably on how you do your web analytic reporting. So, again, I'm not too sure how many of you are going to get your hands dirty on the actual whatever system you have, but the URL can play quite an important part in analysing data for people. So here I've got an example of the University of Open Educational Resource. They've got a learning object which has just got an arbitrary number called 432. Okay, we can obviously easily, by just simply putting a filter on those log analysis, we can basically say, well, I want to find all the lines that basically are that URL. I've now suddenly got a total for any given date or time frame of how many people have actually been to that URL. That's great. Now I come to you and say, well, actually, I want to know all the hits on STEM-related learning objects. Well, there's no mention of STEM in here at all. In fact, there's no mention here of the subject at all. So, you know, how would you know that this object was STEM-related? Well, you're going to have to do a really nasty piece of work. You're basically going to have to link up your log files with your database and somehow compile the whole lot together. So maybe, with a little bit of forethought, in this next example, is you actually maybe as part of your URL construction, you include the subject area. And all of a sudden, when we're analysing this material, we not only can obviously collate on the learning object, but we could also, by using the subject areas, we could potentially collate there. This example is actually talking a little bit about something else, but since I'm short on time, I shall press on. But I'll just mention one little aside on this, is that when you're picking these, you may want to be a bit thoughtful about the structure in which, and this will affect your learning, your object open educational resource, is exactly what schema you use to name all your subject areas. So one of the things, for instance, the Open University we're going through is we've had a number of internal schemas for describing the subject areas that the Open University offers. But increasingly, as we offer up access to our material, our information, we're having to align that against schemas that other people are using. And in particular, JAX is one of the sort of main UK-wide schemas. But it's not quite perfect for all uses. But that's something you need to think about. So, tracking, finally. I'm talking about tracking. I've alluded to it a little bit earlier on. But basically, tracking, which sometimes called campaign tracking, when you sort of read some of the literature or some of the analytic tools, is basically the use of a unique URL to help determine the source of why someone visited your site. So as I mentioned earlier, by constructing a URL whereby you add typically extra parameters on the end that have no functional purpose within your Open Education repository, but are recorded, you can actually determine that someone came specifically from Flickr. Now, I mentioned earlier about that referrer. You remember the referrer that I mentioned earlier that's in the log files? He said, well, why don't I just use that? Well, there are problems with referrers because they're not always recorded. So let me just give you an example. Email one we talked about earlier. You either click on the link in the email, opens it up in the default web browser, but when it goes and hits the server, there's no referrer information. Why is there no referrer information? It hasn't come from a website. It's just the same as if someone typed in the URL. So you have no idea that if you had a whole bunch of those links in your log files, no referrer, well, did someone type that in there? How the hell did they come across that? Did it come out of that email or not? Who knows? So basically, by constructing a unique link, and I've given an example down the bottom here, so this is not dissimilar to something that we use at the Open University. I've used the question mark, which means parameters in URL construction. I've done campaign equals alumni, understand, and the second option here is media equals email, and then some date stamp. So that I have some way of filtering now my log files. I can look for all the ones that have alumni in it, and if I look for that one, I know it was that particular promotion that I happened to send out. And suddenly I've got a way of separating out visits from that particular email. Another case, which is really actually where I first started using these, is actually in iTunes U. But it also applies, for instance, I recently discovered, if you have a video in a web page on one of these things, if you actually click on the video in here, what happens is it isn't the browser that plays the video. It's the video player that plays the video. The video player knows nothing about referrers. So what happens is you don't get a referrer out of someone clicking on your video in here. So you have no idea that video has been embedded in another website. No idea where it's come from. Potentially, by including a unique URL in some fashion, you may know more about it. So again, what happens in iTunes U is that someone clicks on the link in iTunes U, launches your default web browser again. It's no different than someone just typing the link in manually, but using a unique link. In this case, I've done campaign equals iTunes. In this case, section equals science. If you read the example, I was saying this link was in the science section. So, two more slides. Basically, when you're thinking about this, the first thing to do is to say, well, what are my KPIs? What are my key performance indicators? What are the metrics I'm going to be asked to measure? You know, well, how many visitors? But are they really visitors? If you're just adding up IP numbers, no. Maybe the metrics are, well, are they mainly from the UK? Well, how do you know they're in the UK? Well, there's a thing called geolocation, IP geolocation, which basically means it can marry up an IP address with a physical location. They're not entirely accurate, but some of them are pretty accurate. So this here will potentially be fairly accurate because it's got a GPS in it and it can register it. So there's a whole bunch of things. So what are your KPIs? Now, once you've done that, then you have to ask the question, well, can I get accurate metrics for those particular questions? And admittedly, when you're thinking about now, why is you're doing, you know, what these questions here, you may find that, in fact, in 6 months' time or a year's time, those questions have changed. So you need to sort of think, well, okay, I need to be able to adapt. But don't get too depressed about it. The point question is, can you get accurate metrics? So at the moment with iTunes U, I can only get IP numbers. So I'm always conscious that whenever I report anything, whenever I give other people stats, I always say these are unique IPs, and so hopefully people, at least who are familiar with web stats, will know there are limitations with, I'd say, number of visitors. The fact that we've had nearly 3 million visitors could mean that we've actually had 3.1 million, or it might mean we've had 2.9 real visitors. I can't tell for certain, but it's a good proxy. And the last sort of takeaway home message is the way you structure and design your site has an impact on how you can measure. So some of the URL constructions I mentioned earlier, can actually help or hinder the process of measuring things. So when someone says, you know, oh, let's construct the URL this way, you may go, well, hang on a second, how will that help or not help with the measuring of my metrics? I have one final slide. So, if you're going to start tracking people, do remember about privacy. You know, you don't really want to be known, I suspect particularly if it's just funded, we don't want to be known for tracking people individually. You know, so we know that Richard just today actually visited, you know, our website. So if you are going to start putting in tracking systems, don't go overboard and start tracking individual names. If you do start doing that, do seriously think about a privacy policy. you should probably have one anyway, but track people anonymously. You, generally speaking, you don't know that. Don't need to know about individuals and what they're doing. We're not in the advertising or marketing industry. That's not our business. We just simply need to be able to provide supporting data to support the objectives of your OER. And as I said, very finally, do be aware of the limitations of the data you collect. I'm always conscious when I quote figures to people, particularly my bosses, who then tend to go and quote them to someone else, who then quote them to someone else, that there's usually all the caveats. There's usually caveats that get dropped off. And also, I sometimes find, you know, sometimes people change numbers from what is a weekly number to a daily number. So suddenly you find you go from 50,000 a week to 50,000 a day. But, you know, that's not really a limitation of the data, that's really being clear in your communications. And really, that's it. I hope that's been of interest to everyone.